Welcome to A Play on Nerds.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Jarman.
Between us, we have more than 30 years of experience in the nerd arts.
Each week, we endeavor to bring the world of nerddom to all of you.
So push up your glasses and listen up, Internet.
This is A Play on Nerds.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to A Play on Nerds. This is episode 27, and we're so excited to have you back with us for another great one.
27, our podcast is almost as old as we are now.
That's right. Next episode. Well, I guess you're 29 at this point.
No, I'm 28.
What?
I think. Yeah, I'm 28 until this February, right?
Oh, yeah. I had it backwards.
I forgot how old I am, but yeah, I think I'm 28.
Because there's part of the year where you and I are the same age, and there's about a half year where we're not. So I always have to remember which half is which.
There you go. You're a youngin'.
That's true. I remember being so mad about that in high school because you and all the other guys have like February and March birthdays, like all of you. And your dad was like, "Well, you're 18 now. I'm going to take a big group of you guys to a strip club in Tampa."
Yep, and you couldn't go.
And I could. I was the only one of us that was not 18 yet. And I remember I met you guys at Gator's Dockside for wings afterwards. And Kai was like, "Steve, smell my hands. They smell like perfume. Steve, my hands smell so good." I was like, "Kai, I really don't want to smell your hands, dude."
See, I will say, listening audience, and if any females listen to the show, I hope we have females listening to the show. Just none of you
might be two or three.
Yeah, you haven't been active on the social media, so if you're listening, say something. But
yeah.
I think that was probably the last time I ever enjoyed a strip club. Since then, it's just an awkward kind of smelling of shame and sadness kind of places.
Yeah, I've been to two strip clubs ever. One, I think I mentioned on the show when I went on a bike ride with my uncles.
Yes.
And it was just like a quarter mile downtown and then strip club. and then the other time was for my bachelor party.
And that was fun.
And that was okay because, you know, it's the one time where I'm like, look, I'm at a bachelor party. I'm at my bachelor party. If there's one time I should be able to enjoy this.
And it wasn't fun because it was a strip club. It was because of who we were all with and the event that we were experiencing it because of.
And that woman who wasn't a stripper but just gave back massages and lingerie, best part of the whole night.
Absolutely.
Hands down, that was the best part of the whole night, was getting that massage.
I don't think I got one. I don't think I got one.
So Jarman, what have you been up to this week?
Well, I apparently had a much better week than you, which we'll talk about later, but Steven had dengue fever and Ebola at the same time. But
it's a bitch.
I actually got my vocal booth in the mail, which sounds odd, but this big giant freight truck came and dropped a bunch of boxes in my front yard, and I had to, with my parents, they came over and helped me to put it together, and it's a bunch of walls you kind of stack together, and you have to screw everything into place, and there's just giant booth in my room now, and it's really sexy, and I want to use it all the time. And
so it came IKEA style?
Kind of, yeah, except like much more solid materials than IKEA. Thankfully, because IKEA...
How many
of
those little
South,
wrenches did you get?
No wrenches. Okay. It required
so
an actual drill.
This is soundproof or close to it in theory?
Close to being soundproof. It's called a whisper room. That's the brand name. And has like ventilation and everything. So before I was recording all my voiceover work in a closet and I was sweating my ass off, I'd come out of there and I'd be just covered in sweat and it was just horrible and I couldn't breathe after a while. So now I can breathe, I can stay in there for a long time and record audiobooks and that kind of thing. So I've already gotten a lot of work since I've gotten installed, so I'm really happy about it. So,
well, good.
But also, honorable mention this past week, super exciting, Supernatural, Arrow, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., American Horror Story have all come back, and the new shows Gotham and The Flash have started, so TV is getting very exciting again, which is really fun. Do you watch any of those shows, Steve?
Of all those ones, I watched maybe the first few episodes of The Arrow. I liked it, but it wasn't enough for me to keep watching it.
Yeah.
And American Horror Story is one of Anna and I's favorites.
Oh, yeah.
But we've only watched the first two seasons because they're the only ones on Netflix.
Okay. The third one, I think, is either just now available or will be very soon.
It should be, yeah. Yeah. Coven. But I've heard mixed things about Coven anyway.
I saw Coven. So. It was all right. It was just, I don't know, it wasn't as scary as the previous two, but it was still entertaining characters. It was interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then Flash and Gotham, those are both superhero films, I'm assuming.
Yeah. The Flash is in the same
DC universe.
It's the same universe as Arrow, actually. The same cinematic universe, if you will, as Arrow.
Is Gotham also in the same cinematic universe?
Unfortunately, Gotham is not. It kind of takes place, and it's on a different channel. It's on Fox. So.
Oh, gotcha. I didn't realize that.
But it's grittier, and it's interesting. But it's all right. It's just it's not as exciting to watch. I like The Flash and Arrow because they're kind of lighthearted and, you know, they're CW. They're all good-looking people having problems, you know. But yeah. Gotham is just kind of a downer. But anyways.
If you like sad TV, check out Gotham, everyone.
So what was your lovely week like, Steve?
My week has been eaten alive by disease.
Yep, he was patient zero in the United States.
Yeah, how about that? No, that's not quite correct. But so I had a beautiful three-day weekend starting on Friday and woke up Saturday morning, and both my wife and I had a tickle in the back of our throat. And by Saturday afternoon, I had a fever and the chills and aches and all sorts of terrible, awful things. My wife got better after about 2 days, and I just kept being sick. You know, even now I've got a little bit of a low-grade fever, and this is day six of said illness. Yeah, and my voice is on the edge of going out, but it's a good time.
This is, again, what he's sacrificing for the podcast.
I've drank more hot tea in the last 5 days than I have in the rest of my life combined.
I bet your body is thankful for that in general.
Yeah, true. Just lots of hot tea.
Would you say that your wife is healthier than you in general?
Yes.
Okay, that's probably why she got over the sickness faster.
Well, no, but like, yeah, whatever. Whatever.
Just saying.
Lots of hot tea, soup, good stuff.
There you go. That's the good part about being sick is like, hey, I got an excuse. I'm just going to lie here and eat soup and watch TV.
But yeah, so that's been literally my whole week. I had to call off 4 days of work, and that sucks, but yeah, it happens.
Do you get any paid time off, or is it all just you lose it?
I do have a little bit. I had to use time off. I hurt my shoulder, I guess, about a month and a half, 2 months ago now, and I had to use a few days then. So it's a little depleted, so I'm going to lose a little bit of money on the deal, but I do have some to cover it.
Well, that's good.
And I also have stock that I can always pull from if we need to.
There you go.
Yep.
I'm not all these clues. I love this. It's like the ongoing game of who does Steve work for? He drops these clues. He pieces them all together. You should know by now, but he's never going to say
it.
Yeah,
you should. You should know. There's a couple episodes ago where if you don't know by then, I mean, come on.
Oh, especially that episode. Okay. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yeah, I'm feeling a bit better. I hope by tomorrow afternoon I'm back to 100%. But we'll
absolutely
see.
It's time for Nerdy News.
So, what kind of nerdy news are you bringing us this week, Steve?
So later on in the show, we're going to be bringing back Copycat Cinema. I feel like every time we do Copycat Cinema, it's the triumphant return.
I know.
Have you noticed? It's like every Weird Al album is his comeback album. Single one.
And he's like, you know, I come back every 3 years, guys. And he's like, eh, whatever.
Everyone's like, yeah, I guess we'll see you in 3 years, Al.
But no, I've actually had two of our listeners say, hey, when are you guys doing Copycat Cinema again? So the people like it.
Yeah. So to stay on the dog theme, I chose a dog-related science story. Scientists in Europe now believe that dogs may have played a key role in us kicking the Neanderthals' ass thousands of years ago.
Man's best friend? Homo sapiens' best friend?
I said humanity's best friend. That was the title I went with on that one.
Huge manatee?
Yeah, huge manatee's best friend. we know that early man used dogs, and a lot of the early dog skeletons are pretty big dogs, about the size of German shepherds. We know that they made harnesses and packs for these animals, because we found remnants of these harnesses and these packs that would fit no other animal there. We also know that they were around and that we were using them and not hunting them, because dogs aren't in basically any cave paintings that we found. Animals that have hunted, you know, wildebeest and elephants and that sort of stuff, but no dogs anywhere, which insinuates that they were part of the family from what they can tell. So they believe that our early relationship with dogs and them helping us to hunt is what gave us the edge over Neanderthals, who had already had thousands of years to evolve, and what eventually wiped them out of Europe.
And they were nearly just as smart as Homo sapiens.
They had bigger brains.
Yeah.
Less developed, but larger. And so then in reading this article, I also found an interesting thing about how also our eyes, like humans' eyes, may have been what made the difference. And the reason for that is in all the great apes, and most apes for that matter, the sclerae or sclera, which is the whites of your eyes, is almost non-existent.
Yeah, that's true.
If you look at other apes, they're almost all pupil. And they believe that us having sclera allowed us to define things with our eyes and basically have silent communication with each other. And through studies, current studies on dogs, they've realized that dogs can also pick up on eye movements of humans and respond to them. And so they think that that may have also given us an edge with them because we didn't have to actually talk to communicate to organize a hunt. We could communicate silently with our eyes.
And that goes from a scene in that movie, actually, one of the movies we had to watch for Cup of Cat Cinema, that the whole making yourself the alpha for your dog is to make eye contact with it until it looks away first. I don't know if that's actually true, but it was in the movie.
Yeah. Well, it was probably true in the 80s, so it may still be true now.
Just like my 2004 dinosaur trivia.
Yeah, that was all accurate 10 years ago. But yeah, so dog has been man's best friend since there were actually other men.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It's a long time friendship.
Yep. And we have bred them to be almost useless. So so what do you bring us from the world of nerdy news this week?
Well, you might have seen this going around the news. There's this story about, a research paper came out that has strong evidence that there's life after death. And it's like, if you read it, it's still very interesting. That's what's kind of unfortunate with this, the media, when they take studies like this that actually do have very fascinating results, but then they just sensationalize it. And that kind of makes people who are, more skeptical about things in general just not even look at it because it looks ridiculous. But what the study was by Dr. Sam Parnia, for writing AWARE research paper is what it's called, for the journal Resuscitation. Basically, they're doing this study where they monitor all the incoming patients who are heart attack victims, and they had 2,026 cardiac arrest patients that they monitored, and they were trying to see the ones that came back from cardiac arrest, try to interview them about their experience while they were clinically dead. But out of the 2,026, this is kind of depressing, only 140 of them actually were able-minded and survived. Most of them died. But but out of the 140 that survived, and they interviewed all of these people, 2% of the 140, I'm not sure exactly what that comes out to. I'm not good at math. 2% of them were able to describe events that happened while they were clinically dead. So their eyes were closed, their brain had zero activity, but yet they were able to describe events that were happening during that time period when they're clinically dead. So it happened. But we can't explain that scientifically yet. I'm sure we will eventually. But that means there's some kind of consciousness that happens, at least in that time period, directly after clinical death, or maybe indefinitely. Maybe our consciousness is doing something after we die. We don't know. Maybe it's floating around in the ether or something.
I mean, here's my take on that. Mm-hmm. So when you drown, or any other sort of death that involves deprivation of oxygen, you start to see things. You go into a state of euphoria, and the visual centers of your brain basically display nothing but white.
Yeah,
that's science. That's what that is. So for me to hear that people have heart attacks and then die and their brain stops getting oxygen, claim to have seen things, sure.
No, probably. No. That's what you're missing of it, is that it's a scientifically tested where they were seeing things that they purposely placed in the room during the time period of clinical death. So they were reporting the things that were happening in the room during clinical death, not like seeing pearly gates or something. They were seeing like the operating room and things that were happening in the operating room specifically. Like as soon as clinical death happens, they would create these events so that later on they could test if the person survived.
Did they say what kind of events?
They had cards that were in the room that they, I guess, would pull out and they'd have them visible, and they would describe certain actions that were only taking place while they were in that period of clinical death. So my thing is, I think it's probably going to be scientifically explainable within the next few years. Maybe there's some kind of awareness in the brain that we can't monitor that's still happening like a few minutes after death, but then it fades away or something. That's possible, Like maybe you're still
able. What was the math on that? You said what percent?
2% of 140 people.
I just want to do the math on that real quick.
It's not many. But I mean, all you need is a couple kind of verified interesting cases. But once again, that's why I think it was overblown.
2%?
Yeah.
So 2.8 people. So less than 3 people claim that this happened. In that sort of statistical group, there's a chance that people just guessed what was going on. With that... And the fact that it's not 3 people makes me really nervous.
It's 2.8 people. Because that one guy wasn't fully conscious when he's talking about it.
Well, the guy lost his legs, so.
But either way, I was going to say that just that even if they did see things that were happening in the room or hear them or aware of them happening, it doesn't mean there's an afterlife. It just means there could be some kind of brain activity we're not aware of that happens after, like a few minutes after you're dead. You know, like, so it doesn't mean that that's even that study, if it's true, doesn't prove of an afterlife. It just proves that maybe our brain's still doing things that we can't monitor.
Your brain takes a while to shut down.
Yeah,
it does.
Like it's supposedly the brain looked like it was dead, but maybe it was still experiencing things we just can't monitor yet. So anyways, it was a fascinating study, but it didn't really prove anything one way or the other.
I want to meet that 0.8 of a dude.
Yeah, me too.
That's what I want.
And I tried really hard to find another Bigfoot story, but I couldn't find one. So.
Don't worry, I'm sure next week someone will make something up.
Yay.
So to stay in our theme of dogs, we're going to be discussing a different type of dog that apparently Jarman has some very strong feelings on, so I'm excited to hear about this. We're going to be talking about hot dogs throughout the U.S.
Hey, if you were a hot dog and you were starving, would you eat yourself?
What?
I know I would. First, I'd smother myself with brown mustard and relish. I'd be so delicious. So would you?
I don't know.
Don't jerk me around, Norm. It's a simple question. A baby could answer it. If you were a hot dog and you were starving, would you eat yourself?
I guess so.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Woo, hot dog.
Hot dog. So hot dogs are something that I think we all remember eating as kids, but most of us have given up as adults.
most of
that
us.
Might just be me, but that's how it feels. All the same, who didn't love going to, you know, a picnic when you were 7 years old? And they said, hot dogs or hamburgers? And you said, hamburger. And they said, well, it'll be 15 minutes for the hamburgers. We have hot dogs right now. And you said, hot dog.
That always happened.
That was the scenario every friggin' time.
Okay, I'll have a hot dog. Why not?
Yeah, all right.
I always wanted a cheeseburger more, though.
So, Jeremy, before I say this one, can you tell me what the Atlanta-style hot dog is?
I feel like I did know this because we had a hot dog restaurant that we went to. And I don't remember what it was. What is it?
It is creamy coleslaw, white onion, and chili.
Okay, I've had that before. Yeah, that is really good.
It sounds good. From Seattle, where I lived for 6 years, they've got the Seattle-style dog, which is a grilled dog that is split in half, put on a cream-cheesed bun,
ooh,
topped with grilled onions, jalapenos, and grilled cabbage.
That sounds fantastic.
It does. Every one of these I read, I went, man, maybe I've got to get hot dogs another try.
Well, they're not healthy, so you probably shouldn't. Just eat them occasionally.
7 or 8 more tries.
Well, you live in New York. You could find like a nice gourmet hot dog place.
Yeah, I could find a gourmet. I at all costs attempt to avoid street meat.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, go to like a gourmet, like fancy hot dog place like once every couple months, and then you're not doing yourself any problems.
Or I could just kill the dogs myself make hot dogs.
Don't kill actual dogs.
What?
That's
not how they're made?
No, just don't do that.
So the Chicago style dog is apparently all about toppings. The most common is fresh tomato, huge pickle spears, hot peppers, and this bright green relish that's apparently everywhere.
You're talking about the Chicago dogs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's they put jardinier on everything.
What the hell is jardinier?
It's
like a cologne fragrance I hate.
A mixture of No, that's not right. But it's like a mixture. It's like peppers and pickled things. They put it on pizza. They put it on sandwiches. They put it on hot dogs. They put it on everything in Chicago. My stepbrother lives there. It's like, and they love it on hot dogs too.
Okay. Arizona gives you about what you'd expect, which is essentially a taco dog. It's a hot dog wrapped in bacon. Sounds awesome to me.
Oh, yes.
pinto beans, onions, jalapenos, chopped tomatoes, and cheese. Sounds like a taco dog with bacon.
Which makes it all the better.
And then while doing research for this, I read Texas, the style of hot dog that came up for them the most often was the corn dog. And I looked it up, and there's apparently like 15 different people that have claimed to invent the corn dog.
It's a hotly debated issue.
Yeah, but at this point, the leading is these brothers, Carl and Neil Fletcher, who were just young men when they invented it. They said that they introduced it at the Texas State Fair in the late 1930s.
It's definitely a fair food.
Yeah, definitely fair food. On a stick? Come on.
Mm-hmm.
But they are most widely believed to be the ones that actually invented it. So the final one, and the one that I thought sounded spectacular, is called the Scrambled Dog. I couldn't figure out what this one was from, but it came up on all sorts of top 10 lists. It's a cut-up hot dog covered in chili. It's basically served in a bowl with onions and sweet pickles, and then it's covered in oyster crackers. And it was the only hot dog I found that was expressly not made to be eaten with your hands.
Gotcha. So it's like, is that really a hot dog anymore at that point?
I don't know. It contains a hot dog. A hot dog is the main substance still.
That reminds me of my mom chopping up hot dogs and putting it in mac and cheese for dinner sometimes.
Oh, hell yeah. That's where it was at.
It was pretty good. And then my strong feelings about hot dogs were just...
Yeah, let's hear your hot dog opinion.
See, I used to hate going to Costco. If you guys don't know what Costco is a big box store is what they call it. It was featured in that movie Idiocracy, but it's a real place. And basically... Originally, these stores were meant for like restaurants and businesses to go get a big, you know, giant box of paper towels that'll last a normal person 6 months, but a restaurant like 3 days. So now they start getting off memberships to them, and they have membership there. I'm sure that they have places like this everywhere. But anyways, we go to Costco. I hate it when I was a kid because we take forever just getting these groceries and rolling around. But I look forward to, at the very end, going to the snack bar, and they had a hot dog, and it was huge, and it was delicious. And they always had like sauerkraut and everything you put on there. And that still to this day is like my favorite hot dog. I don't know why. It's so stupid. It's like a dollar. It's wonderful.
Yeah. I remember, you remember the Man Show on Comedy Central back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
I remember one of their earliest bits was about going to a ballpark and saving money. And a lot of it was like sneaking in booze. But one of it was, sure, the hot dog cost you $9, but the condiments are free. And they just show them like... A hot dog with like 3 inches of sauerkraut on it.
Oh, Jesus. There is just a thing, it's too much sauerkraut.
Hey, don't say that to a German person.
Yeah, das ist gut, too much sauerkraut.
That's how World War II started. Maybe.
We had some real sauerkraut starting that thing.
Oh, man. Speaking of which, I just watched the movie Iron Sky.
Oh, I love that movie.
I was pleasantly surprised. I'd been avoiding it for so long, but it was actually really good.
Basically where Sarah Palin becomes the president in a, you know, very bad future, version of the future, and there's Nazis in the moon. It's awesome.
Yep. That's pretty much a synopsis of the entire film right there.
It's awesome. All right, now it's time for Copycat Cinema. And this week we are covering... two movies that came out in 1989 and were almost identical, K-9 and Turner and Hooch.
Both of them classics in their own right.
I don't remember who was fighting for which movie.
I am fighting for K-9.
Okay, that's right. Well, by all means...
As usual, I am fighting for the worst movie between the two that we've chosen.
Yep.
Almost consistently, I'm stuck with the definitive worst one, and I love it. So K-9 features the worst of the Belushi brothers. the one we're stuck with, let me put it that way. He is a cop who doesn't want a partner, is chasing down a drug bust and needs a dog. He gets a dog. He hates the dog. He's stuck with the dog. Him and the dog end up loving each other. His girlfriend ended up getting kidnapped by the bad guy. He's got to go kill the bad guy with the dog to get her back. And that's pretty much it. That's the whole movie right there. What about Turner and Hooch?
So Turner and Hooch, another story about a white cop who reluctantly gets a dog. But he is basically a very, you know, by the book cop who lives in working in the small town. And he is just now being promoted to go work in the big city. in, like, I believe it was San Francisco or Sacramento, I think it was.
Okay.
But everyone in the town knows him. He's kind of like, you know, the head cop in the sheriff's department. And he's training his replacement, which happens to be the guy from Family Matters, who always plays a cop in every movie he's in.
Hey, he played a taxi driver. Not a taxi driver, a limo driver in Crocodile Dundee. Thank you very much.
Oh, there you go. But he's a cop in Die Hard and a cop in Family Matters. He knows everyone in the town, and he goes to talk to an old man in the town who knows him really well. And the old man says, crazy stuff is happening at that factory over there, and I don't like it. And the old man has this giant dog, Hoochoo, jumps all over Tom Hanks' character. And the next night, the old man witnesses a murder, so they murder him too. And so now Tom Hanks has to investigate this murder and find out what's going on, but the only witness was Hooch, the dog. So he has to take the dog and try to solve the murder. Hijinks ensue, and he meets a veterinarian lady who's completely unnecessary in the plot.
And, she really is.
And then he solves the crime himself with the dog, and he starts to love the dog and lightens up a little bit, and he gets married happily ever after.
Spoilers! Spoilers! Spoilers!
Except for the whole part about the dog dying.
Yeah, except for them pulling an old yeller.
Yeah, they pulled an old yeller. Yeah. We'll put the spoilers bumper in there that your wife loves so much.
Spoilers. Okay. That's a pretty good synopsis. So, as always in Copycat Cinema, let's start talking about the similarities between these two films.
Sure.
Both of them obviously feature cops reluctantly taking care of dogs.
Yes.
Both of them feature villains that are big members in the community.
Yep.
Like well-to-do members in the community doing bad behind the curtains. Both of them involve getting the girl, sort of.
Sort of, yeah.
Some extent or another. Both involve the dog in one way or another destroying the officer's car.
Yes. I put both of them involve searching for drugs or legal substances in a factory/warehouse.
Yeah, that's true. It's very true. And really, if we looked at it, I bet you we could find 20 or 30 others. These movies are so ridiculously similar.
It's like someone pitched this movie, and then someone gave it to crappy writers, and then someone gave it to good writers, and they made two movies.
And then the crappy writers made two movies.
Yeah, there you go. They're both not fantastic.
So my first point for K-9 is that the dog was just better. In K-9, the dog is a trained attack dog.
True.
It responds to commands. It can smell drugs. You know, it's a tactical dog as opposed to the dog in Turner and Hooch, which is just some dog.
A big, freaking crazy dog.
Yep. So therefore, I think that the dog in K-9 is better overall than the dog in Turner and Hooch.
Yeah, I can agree with that. If it was real life, I definitely would want the dog from K-9 and not the dog from Turner and Hooch. So, fair point.
Then again, the dog from Turner and Hooch did seem to have almost human-like intelligence.
True.
The way it was portrayed.
He could just talk to him and tell him what to do, and he'd do it.
Yep. Brilliant.
So, my first point for why Turner and Hooch is better is I just immediately really, really liked Tom Hanks' character because I felt like he was so much like me. You open the movie up with him cleaning everything in his apartment, organizing everything, and I'm like, I feel so bad for this guy because I know what's coming. They're going to ruin his perfect existence by putting this giant, nasty, drooling dog into his life. So, I love the main character so much better than Jim Belushi's character.
I actually said to Anna, I'll give you that point entirely. I actually said to Anna while we were watching it, why don't they make movies like that anymore where in the opening they just show us what the character does in everyday life and tell us everything we need to know about them?
Yeah, without saying no dialogue.
Yep, without any kitschy dialogue, without any crutches, just showing him doing his morning routine was enough to tell me everything I need to know about that character. And that was brilliant. I'll give it to him.
Yeah, absolutely. There are definitely some strong points in this movie.
So my second point for why K-9 is better than Turner and Hooch is that the villain seems much larger scale and therefore much more intimidating.
Fair point.
He's got people with helicopters and machine guns killing people for him. At the end, he's running to an escape helicopter when he's gunned down. I just think that overall he's a much more intimidating villain than the other film, than Turner and Hooch, because in Turner and Hooch we never were really clear about who the villain was, and you knew that the boss, like the guy who played Coach, I can't remember his name.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember his name.
Was going to be the villain because you recognized him.
Yeah.
That's such a dead giveaway in so many films, is like that other character that you recognize from something, he's the one that did it.
Or you can recognize him, but he can't be that big of an actor. Otherwise, you know that means he's going to be the bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. I was watching another movie earlier, and they showed, like, the character's father had supposedly been dead for years, and they showed a picture of him, and it was, what's his name, Jonathan Rhys-Davies?
Oh, no. Yeah.
And I was like, nope, he's still alive, he's gonna show up, because otherwise they wouldn't have picked someone that we knew. Like, it's just a dead giveaway in movies now.
Yeah, it's true.
But I just thought the villain was much scarier. And the fact that he has his girlfriend hostage for like the last third of the film, pretty scary.
I think if you had moved the villain from K-9 to Turner and Hooch, it would have been like a perfect movie. Perfect 80s movie. But
true.
Yeah. Because, yeah.
So what's your third point?
So my second point is this movie somehow skated past on a PG rating. And it was even more violent, I think, than K-9 was. And K-9 was PG-13. There's sexual innuendo in this. She rubs her butt against his crotch, like, sexually. And he says bird shit. He said they curse all the time. There's a stabbing of an old man who dies on the ground. It's just like, how is this movie PG? Like, I think it's hilarious and wonderful that some kid would have been mortified. And parents as well. Oh, it'll be a happy, funny movie about a man and his dog who acts kind of like a human. And then, nope, this is not good for kids. Neither movie was good for kids, really.
Yeah. I'd say between the two, Turner and Hooch is the much more family-oriented film, though.
True. Just because of Tom Hanks. Just
because of Tom Hanks being Tom Hanks.
Pretty much. So what's your third point?
The third point for why K-9 is better is because the dog doesn't die.
Funny point, there's actually a quote from Tom Hanks saying that he thinks Turner and Hooch would have done so much better in the box office if the dog didn't die at the end.
Spoilers! Well, here's the thing. That brings me back to your point earlier that the veterinarian girlfriend was so unnecessary. Mm-hmm. It could have been anyone. If she had been a veterinarian at the end, save the dog, then that would have been the payoff to her actually being a veterinarian.
She doesn't actually further the plot in any way, shape, or form.
Exactly. So she could have been anyone who was just a dog lover.
Yeah.
And it would have been exactly the same. But because they made her a veterinarian, the ending was extra disappointing because she couldn't save him. Versus in K-9 where he takes him into a human doctor and the human doctor saves the dog.
Both bullet wounds too.
Yep. Gunshot to the chest for both.
Yep. Another similarity between the two movies.
Bam.
Bam.
And then they go on to be longtime partners in K-9 because they made two sequels.
They did. K-9-1-1 and K-9 PI.
Yep. There you go.
God. I bet those are great movies.
I'm telling it's the Belushi we're stuck with, as I said before.
I was going to say my third point is the fabulous amounts of 80s saxophone in Turner and Hooch. Because
there is a lot. It's like every transition is 80s saxophone.
But I would say more so it's the character development, the main character. Even though his female character companion didn't change or do anything, his character completely changed by the end of the movie. He was much more relaxed. He was happy staying in the small town. His character was different. That's the point. You're supposed to move from point A to point B. Jim Belushi's character did not change at all in K-9. He's the same doofy guy obsessed with his job who's not paying enough attention to his more beautiful than him girlfriend. And that just makes it a stronger film, and you care more about the character, you know. Plus it's Tom Hanks acting, you know. Much better than Jim Belushi's acting. But the saxophone, it was close.
Yeah, very close. I'll give it to you on that one. In fact, K-9 features a lot of like weird like hip-hop-y kind of music.
Oh, I was going to say
which is almost off-putting.
The music in K-9 was a mix between Seinfeld theme and Bobby McFerrin.
Yeah.
It was really off-putting and out of place. But, Steve.
Yeah.
Like you always do, the Star Trek connections. I have a Muppet connection for K-9.
Ooh. Let me sit and think for just a moment. I want to see if I can pick it out. Nope, I got nothing.
I had to dig pretty deep. Okay. I didn't even use the advanced search on IMDb for this.
Wow.
The composer of K-9, his name is Miles Goodman. He did Little Shop of Horrors, the movie version, back in the day, but he also was the composer for Muppet Christmas Carol. So the same composer who put together the boop a bop da dow for K-9 also composed Muppet Christmas Carol. Isn't that disturbing? I don't know.
Huh, he also did, he's tied with Frank Oz. He also did Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah,
and What About Bob?
I love both of those movies.
Oh, he wrote the underscore for Muppet. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, like not the songs, I guess, but like scored the rest of it.
The Muppets have used the same guy for their songwriting for forever.
That makes sense. They all have the same kind of feel to them.
Yep.
But also the Star Trek connection. The guy played Lyman, the main villain in K-9. He played Captain Janeway's father, Henry Janeway, on Star Trek Voyager.
Mostly I know him as John Locke's dad.
Yes, from Lost. That's right. Yep. He was good. He was very good in that.
One other random cameo that I really enjoyed is in K-9, the waiter, who James Belushi pretends to be blind in front of, is the voice of Homer Simpson.
Yep, Dan Castellaneta.
Yep.
Castellaneta.
And I just thought that was just a funny little before they were anything kind of cameo.
Yeah, he looked so young. I mean, he's still bald, but...
Yeah, still bald, but...
And very young Ed O'Neill, which is kind of weird, too.
Wait, who?
The guy played the dog trainer cop. He's the guy from Married with Children and Modern Family.
Oh, yeah. Another random, I don't even know his name, a person who's mostly a child actor, Eldon Henson, who you guys would probably know. He was in Idle Hands, and he was in all of the Mighty Duck films. He played Fulton, the big guy who could shoot the puck really hard. He plays one of the kids that finds the money on the beach.
Oh, wow.
At the beginning of Turner and Hooch, and I saw him and went, ah!
Oh, yeah, that kid. That guy.
Yeah. And it was the youngest I'd seen him in anything.
Huh. Way to recognize him.
Yeah. Well, some faces just don't ever change. And his Mungo kind of Paleolithic face.
He's going full paleo. So I had some, we're going to Turner and Hooch stuff here. One was kind of cool trivia was that a line from this film where Turner yells at Hooch to not eat the car was used in an animation test for footage for Toy Story. And when Tom Hanks saw the test footage, it convinced him to take on the role of Sheriff Woody. It's kind of fascinating. Also, so originally, Turner and Hooch was going to be directed by Henry Winkler, the Fonz. But the Disney exec, Jeffrey Katzenberg, was so unhappy with his work halfway through, they just fired him. And originally, the role was also being considered for Jack Nicholson, Bill Murray, and Chevy Chase. I could see Chevy Chase or Bill Murray, but Jack Nicholson in Turner and Hooch, that would have been a totally different movie.
You got to remember, in 89, Jack Nicholson still had some comedy under his belt.
That's true. He was doing a lot of comedy.
It was the 90s when he went super serious.
Yeah. Get that dog out of my car.
Go ahead, destroy it.
I don't care. Oh, and also the gratuitous shots of Tom Hanks' junk because he had to wear a banana hammock the entire movie. I don't understand why.
I was like, this is PG, and we have seen a lot of Tom Hanks bulge.
Yeah, just like hanging down
a lot
below. So yeah, that was some stuff for Turner and Hooch there. But
yep.
Audience, you decide which movie was better.
We'll let history decide for us.
I think history decided they both suck, but that's okay.
So before we leave Turner and Hooch, I've got a little bit of dog trivia for you.
Yeah.
All right, are you ready?
Yes, sir. I know very little about dogs.
Good. Dogs sweat through what part of their bodies?
Just their nose.
See, my wife said nose too. The answer that I got from two different websites was their paws.
What?
Huh. But I'll give it to you because if my wife said it, she's always right.
Yes, the always right rule works for me.
Yep. Okay, true or false, dogs only see in black and white.
I've heard that. Isn't that true?
That it's false.
Oh, okay.
Dogs do have limited color range, but they do see in color. Primarily, they have issues with blue, which is why they say if you have a blue toy and you throw it out into grass, your dog will not be able to find it. Just will not be able to pick it out.
Interesting. That'd be a good way to sneak on a property that has a guard dog. Just wear all blue.
Yep. Bam.
Invisible.
Don't worry. They can always still smell your fear.
True. Or just your sweat.
All right. So what is the number one thing in the U.S. that dogs are trained to do?
Sit.
That's correct. What dog, what sense is a dog's most developed and relied upon?
I think the obvious answer is smell, so I'm going to go with hearing.
You should have gone with the obvious, the smell.
Damn, okay.
you always fight your instincts. And you're always wrong.
I know, it's horrible.
What type of dog naturally has a blue tongue?
Oh, I feel like I used to know this, but is it like St. Bernard?
No, not a bad guess. It's a Chow Chow.
I'm not going to get one of those.
But giraffes have blue tongues.
I'll get a giraffe over a Chow Chow any day.
That's true. You could ride a giraffe. all right. True or false, Dalmatians are born with spots.
False.
That's correct. They're born white, and they get their spots later on.
That's right.
What is the most popular dog breed in North America?
Like a pure breed?
Yeah.
In North America.
Yeah, you can't just say mutt.
Just be. Golden Retriever?
Close. That was actually Anna's guess also. It's the Labrador.
Oh, interesting. I would not have guessed
that. Still in that same kind of vein, same very sweet-tempered type of dog.
Yeah.
All right, so for 2 points... This last one, what kind of dog was Hooch?
What kind of dog was Hooch? I believe he was a Dog de Bordeaux.
That is absolutely correct for 2 points.
I had that right in front of me, so I don't know how fair that is, but I'm being honest. But I did look that up. I did look that up because it's part of the trivia, so I just need a reminder of how.
Well, that was my hope, was that you reading through IMDb trivia would have gotten you that.
Dog de Bordeaux.
You got 5 points.
Nice. Out of how many?
9, I think.
Oh, okay. That's okay.
That's more than half. That's better than you do sometimes.
And the Dog de Bordeaux is one of the most ancient French breeds of dogs.
And also one of the most disgusting.
It really was gross.
They are apparently known, and like it's their defining characteristic as a dog, that they drool more than any other dog.
Why would you ever want a dog like that in your house? It has to be just like a completely outside dog.
Oh my god! That looks just seeing the drool in the car, that car scene.
Ugh.
Where what does he say? It looks like you have a noodle sticking out of your mouth or something. Yeah. Like there's that whole improv thing is just oh god,
it was disgusting. I was having I'm gonna have nightmares about him destroying that house. It was
just walking into your room and shaking his head.
No. Anyways,
well, good job. I think that's dog trivia.
Yeah, and that wraps up our dogs for this episode. But I think you guys got a good dose of dogs there.
You got some dog stuff.
All right, so now the triumphant return again of another segment, Hypothetical Hubbub.
And excited.
So this is for Steve here. We give him hypothetical situations. These are the last of the groupings from Chuck Klosterman's Hypotheticals, which you can buy in the store or on Amazon. They're great little hypothetical situations that are great conversation starters at a party or something, but they're also often very disturbing or very weird. So, I'm going to ask what Stephen would do in these situations. First one, you are in a plane crash in the Andes Mountains. As such, and you're completely abandoned there, there's no hope of any rescue anytime soon. As such, you will be forced to consume the human flesh of the people who died on impact. This will be a terrible experience, but it is the only way for you to survive. Fortunately, you did not know any of the victims personally. Now, Would you rather eat a dead baby or would you rather eat a dead elderly person? Would gender play a role in the selection process? And how much would it bother you if this meat turned out to be delicious?
Man, the baby versus old is tough because they're both going to be awful meat.
Well, veal's delicious.
It is, but I'm doubting that the baby has had its legs broken.
I'm sure the plane crash broke its legs. I
mean, yeah, that's true. That's how it died.
God, that's horrible.
I guess I'm going to say eat. I'm going to go with old person.
Could be a big old person, maybe a muscular old person. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You're going to get more meat off the old person no matter what than you would off the baby.
Yeah, that's true.
Just from a practicality point of view. So what were the other ones?
Would gender play a role in the selection process?
I think women would probably, on average, be more tender just because of average lower muscle mass.
They have less muscle strains and everything.
So for deliciousness, I'd go with females.
And the last question was, how much would it bother you if the meat turned out to be delicious?
I mean, alligator was delicious the one time I had it, but I'm not going out and having it every night or probably ever again, realistically.
So it wouldn't bother you?
No. You know, if we have to eat to survive, that's great. If it tastes good, even better.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not going to care at that point or have a moral dilemma, I guess, if I'm going to die or I can eat this. If it's, oh, it's delicious, okay, I guess I can deal with that.
Yeah, at this point, by the time we're tasting it, we have chopped up and cooked another human. Oh, at that point, there's nothing left.
Jeez.
What? Right. That's the reality.
No, it's true. It's true. Very true. All right, so this next one is kind of weird, a little lengthy, so put up with me here for a second.
Okay, I'm bearing with you.
All right. At the age of 30, you suffer a blow to the skull. The head trauma leaves you with a rare form of partial amnesia. Though you are otherwise fine, you're completely missing 5 years from your life. You have no memory of anything that happened between the ages of 23 and 28. That period of your life is completely gone. You are told by friends and family that when you were 25, you supposedly became close friends with someone you met on the street. You possess numerous photos of you and this person, and everyone in your life insists that this individual was your best friend for more than 2 years. You were allegedly inseparable. In fact, you find several old letters and emails from this person that vaguely indicate that you may have even shared a brief romantic relationship. But something happened between you and this individual when you were 27, and the friendship abruptly ended. And, apparently, you never told anyone what caused this schism, so it remains a mystery to all. The friend moved away soon after the incident, wholly disappearing from your day-to-day life, but you have no memory of any of this. Within the context of your own mind, this person never even existed. There is tangible proof that you deeply love this friend, but whenever you look at his or her photograph, all you see is a stranger. 6 weeks after your accident, you are informed that this person has suddenly died. That's the question at the end is, how sad do you feel, and why? So weird of a situation.
Yeah, that was like the longest setup ever for the shortest question. Dear God.
It is.
So I don't remember them. I know for a fact that we were friends.
Very good friends. And
we may have been romantic.
Probably romantic, yeah.
I think I would feel less. Yeah. I think I would feel the same sorrow as if, like, a girl from high school currently that I did remember died. Because there's that much distance.
Oh, wow. It's like a girlfriend from high school that you had?
Yeah. Like, I'm just trying to think of the equivalent of what I would probably feel.
Hmm.
Because I would want to remember them. I'd want to reminisce over them. But at the same time, the disconnect is so distant and so huge that it would be probably nearly impossible to be emotionally.
Because you can't remember how you felt about that person.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, our emotions are formed by our memories and our, you know, chemical reactions to different situations. And if you don't have any of that, then there's nothing for your mind to recall.
It's like, I know I loved that person once, but I don't remember what that was like.
Well, yeah, just like think of it, you know, a grandparent who dies when you're 2 or 3.
Yeah, exactly.
You may vaguely remember loving them. You have tons of pictures and gifts and Christmas ornaments that they made you, but you have no real emotional attachment to that grandparent.
Yeah, I'd be more sad, not about their passing. I mean, sad as I would be for anyone passing, but sad that I don't remember them. Like, oh, that's too bad. Huh.
Yeah. You don't remember the thing that you did share with them.
Exactly. I could see that. Yeah. So far, we're in complete agreement with these three situations.
Yep.
All right. Well, a third one, rather. All right. This is shorter. For whatever the reason, two unauthorized movies are made about your life. The first is an independently released documentary, primarily comprised of interviews with people who know you and bootleg footage from your actual life. Critics are describing the documentary as brutally honest and relentlessly fair. Meanwhile, Columbia TriStars produced a big-budget biopic of your life, casting major Hollywood stars as you and all of your acquaintances. Though the movie is based on actual events, screenwriters have taken some liberties with the facts. Critics are split on the artistic merits of this fictionalized account, but audiences love it. Which film would you be more interested in seeing?
Probably the big budget one, simply because I can't imagine anyone making a interesting hour and 45 minute movie about my life.
I thought the same thing about mine.
I think I'd be more interested to see it strictly to see what the hell they did with it.
And who they cast as who and that kind of thing.
Right, exactly. I think I'd be more interested just from, strange curiosity's point of view.
I don't know which one is the bigger, would you have a bigger ego if you wanted to see the biopic or if you wanted to see the documentary? I don't know which one says that you have a bigger ego. But I feel like the documentary is more like, I don't want to see stars do it. I want to see more of me, where it's like, I already lived my life. I want to see some stars play me. That'd be fun,
Yeah. Yeah. But then I think of the bootleg footage they would get their hands on.
It'd be so shitty.
It would be like chorus performances from high school.
And then cell phone videos.
Cell phone videos. And the movies you and I made.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't think of what else would friggin' actually be in there.
So I think everyone would agree. Biopic. If you don't agree biopic, send us a message, hashtag no biopic.
No biopic.
Hashtag no biopic. All right, so in trailer reviews today, we covered some pretty good-looking films. So I'm excited about some good stuff coming out.
I was pleasantly surprised by the crop we had to pick from. And then I've got to remember also that we're coming up to Oscar season right now.
That's true. I mean, not that
any of these films are going to be considered for Oscar. Maybe the documentary.
Yeah, maybe Automata. It might be.
For visual effects or something like that, possibly.
Yeah, because they never, ever consider sci-fi for Oscars for some freaking reason.
Come on.
They have great performances in that movie, but... Anyways, so I guess we'll talk about Automata first then.
Okay. So it stars Antonio Banderas.
Antonio Banderas.
Who is a sexy, sexy man.
Puss in Boots.
But it appears to be in a future where robots, think iRobot, but not shitty.
Yeah. iRobot, but not over Hollywoodized iRobot.
But they're robots that are modifying themselves and then are modifying another. There wasn't really gaining personalities necessarily, but gaining some sort of awareness. I won't even call it consciousness from what we saw in the preview.
Just kind of like almost getting some kind of organization going between them and other robots.
Well, the fact that the robots are fixing each other and then traveling and helping other robots and fixing them, who are then in turn going and helping them fix other robots.
It's like compassion for each other and they do show the Asimov rules for robotics in the beginning, or variations of them. So yeah, it's almost like this is iRobot, but like a better version, basically, like you said.
Yeah, and for that reason alone, I say take a look at this one, because it looks visually stunning. I don't have anything against Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, I put, is this the triumphant return of Antonio Banderas? Is this his Pulp Fiction, like John Travolta's Pulp Fiction? Maybe he'll
Until he does the fifth Spy Kids movie, yes.
Exactly. But he was really good. He's a good actor. I don't know why he still has such a thick accent, because he's been in the U.S. for so long now. But yeah. He's a little hard to understand, even in this trailer. I'm like, have you gotten worse with your accent? Like, or maybe because he's
working... Maybe he had a seizure.
Maybe a seizure. But his wife, Melanie Griffith, is in this movie as well, and she's looking better, actually. I think she fixed some of her plastic surgery mistakes, so that's good.
I feel like there was so much backlash to that. Her and the only other one I can think of is Goldie Hawn.
Oh, yeah. They both just had their faces just pulled.
Oh, and Nicole Kidman. Holy crap.
Yeah.
The three of them all turned their faces into baboons' ass regions. And like, that's what, literally what they looked like.
They were beautiful women, and they were aging well, too. Like, especially Nicole Kidman. Like, she was fine.
Oh, yeah. What's wrong with... God.
Like, look at Meryl Streep. If she's had any work done, it's probably been very subtle. But she's aging gracefully. She looks like she looks her age, but she's a beautiful woman for her age. That's fine. And she gets tons of roles. Yeah.
She has gone into it gracefully.
Yes. But I guess your acting is just so good that doesn't matter. Well,
but that's the other thing. There are older actresses who have had work done, but they do it the right way.
And it's not too much.
The other one that I think of is Glenn Close,
mm-hmm.
who is another actress who has obviously had some sort of work done, but has drifted into her older age as an actress very gracefully.
And it's like a little bit of work, and it's like here and there. And same thing with like men. Like William Shatner's had work done. I mean, but he looks fantastic for his age. It doesn't look too fake, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, same for men too. It's just like, I know you're in the Hollywood business and there's pressure to do that, but man, just take it easy.
Come on. Yeah.
But this looks like a very beautiful film. It looks very pretty. So,
visually stunning. It looks like it.
And just like, it doesn't look cheesy. It looks like it's done well. So I'm definitely doing take a look. Almost take my money, but take a look.
Not quite. Yeah. Take a look, everyone.
Yep. Absolutely.
Watch the trailer because I hadn't heard anything about this film, and I'm excited to see what it is.
Yeah, I hadn't heard a word about it. This next one I had heard a bit about, John Wick, which is, I think it looks like finally Keanu Reeves not taking himself seriously again. Like, he's just having some fun. That's why.
Yeah.
You didn't get that impression?
Well, I think that the movie that I associate that with more so is, nobody friggin' saw this thing, Man of Tai Chi.
Oh, was it a silly movie? Or was it...
Not silly, but just, he played a role that was okay for him, and he did it well.
Hmm.
And if you haven't seen Man of Tai Chi, check it out. It's got some cool martial arts.
It's on Netflix?
It was. I'm not sure if it still is or not. But it's also directed by Keanu Reeves, and he does a really good job in it. Check it out.
Well, and this John Wick movie is about, seems like an ex-contract killer or some kind of ex-mob
enforcer, maybe.
Something like that, but was retired for a while, but then these guys who want to steal his car, they also kill his dog, and his dog was given to him by his dead wife before she passed away. So you pissed off John Wick, and now he's back.
And his dying wife is the reason he got out of the business.
Exactly.
From what they insinuate.
And it's, you know, not a very complex plot. It's just like really fun looking action sequences, a lot of butt kicking, and Theon Greyjoy from Game of Thrones is in it.
I was actually just about to say that. And Theon's in there being an asshole like always.
But with an American accent.
Did you know that he's musician Lily Allen's brother?
I did. And actually, it's funny because I don't know how far you are. It's not really a spoiler or anything, but
spoilers.
They were going to cast, they're trying to cast Lily Allen to play his sister in the show. But there's an awkward sexual tension type scene between Theon and his
sister.
There
is. We're done with the Game of Thrones that is available to watch.
Okay.
At this point.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, then you've seen that. So she was like, no, I'm not going to take that part. I'm not going to let my brother molest me on screen. So
yeah,
that would have been really
good
weird.
Good call, Lily Allen.
Good call indeed. So for John Wick, I'm going to say if someone will see it with me, I will say shut up and take my money because it looks like fun.
I'll say get the couch ready, because I'll probably won't go see it in theaters, but it's something that I would rent from a red box and sit and enjoy a few beers and watch a good action film.
Oh, there you go. It's like a good watching Taken or something. It's just ridiculous fun.
Oh, yes. Taken is all sort of, they're making a third one.
I know.
How the hell are they doing that?
I don't even care. Give me more.
Maybe they took his dog this time.
I hope they put him, make a movie with Denzel Washington and Liam Neeson in the same movie, kicking butt at the same time.
yeah. It's just called Tooken.
Tooken.
All right. Well, good. Two good reviews so far.
Mm-hmm.
Our last movie is a documentary called Art and Craft, which when I watched the trailer for it, I said to myself, how is this guy not in jail?
Yep.
But it's about this guy who is, from what I understand, not a trained artist, who makes elaborate forgeries.
Beautiful, elaborate forgeries.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Elaborate forgeries that he then takes into museums and sells to museums with them thinking it's the original.
Now, did he sell them or did he just give them to the museums? Like donate them?
I think he sold them. I think he makes money off it.
Because I thought that was the way he was not getting arrested, was that he was claiming that they were the original artist's work, but he wasn't taking any money. Because the guy even says, I'm just assuming that's why he hasn't been arrested yet. Because they know who he is. They know he's doing it, but he hasn't been arrested.
Yeah. But he works in all sorts of different mediums. He's working in paint. At one point, he's like, you know, they should be looking for the charcoal lines on this. I just use colored pencil because you can't tell the difference.
and neither could the aficionados.
And he's been doing this for apparently years, years and years and years. This old guy has been tricking people into thinking that his art that he makes is by the original person. Everything from Picasso. I think there was a Rembrandt somewhere in there.
And he's definitely a bit off. He's got some kind of maybe like Asperger's or some kind of like on the autism scale, because he's just very socially unusual but very, very skilled. So like kind of artistic savant type.
But it looks like a very interesting documentary. I want to see how this guy has been getting away with it for so long more than anything else.
Yeah. Like I figure I'll watch it just for that reason.
But Art and Craft, I'm going to say, take a look.
But we'll see. I'll see a little more.
I can only think of two documentaries I ever saw in theaters ever.
Yeah.
One was Gigantic, which is the They Might Be Giants documentary that came out.
Ah, of course.
And was premiered at the Florida Film Festival. And then the other one was Bowling for Columbine. And I'm not even sure that qualifies as a documentary.
What was the follow-up to Bowling for Columbine?
Fahrenheit 9/11, which was, in my opinion, Michael Moore's worst piece. It had the least integrity of anything he's made.
I saw that one. I've seen Inconvenient Truth in theaters. I also saw the Ben Stein creationism documentary in theater that was
Expelled.
Yes, and I saw that right after I saw Religious of Bill Maher, which is hilarious.
I loved Religious.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
I hate Bill Maher. I hate him.
A lot of people do. A lot of people do.
I just want to punch him in the face most of the time.
He prides himself in not being likable.
And that's that, I guess, if you got to be proud of something. but I thought Religious was great.
Yeah. It wasn't like a slap in the face. It was just like, these people are ridiculous. Don't be like them.
Yeah. The only part of the movie that I didn't like was it was him in a trailer park or a truck driver's church.
Mm-hmm.
And you have all these truck drivers, bunch of guys who probably either barely graduated high school or maybe didn't, not educated. And he intellectually beats up on these guys that can't defend themselves.
Yeah. It's like, what is that proving? Not really anything.
Yeah. And I was like, come on, Bill, if you get a panel of experts and priests together and you debate them that well, fine, but don't do it to schlubs who.
I mean, it's entertainment value.
Yeah, I get it. That being said, it is a good movie overall.
Yeah.
And they go and they visit one of those crazy mega churches that we grew up around in Orlando.
Oh, yeah.
Calvary Assembly.
There's so many of them here in Florida.
Holy crap, there are. But yeah, Art and Craft, check it. Take a look.
And just like we said last week, our next show will be in 2 weeks. And we don't know where it'll be yet, but stay tuned on our Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. We are also
Google Plus SoundCloud.
We're now going to be available, thanks to our buddy Patrick helping me set this up, on SoundCloud. So our episodes will go up on there as well. If you happen to like that more for some reason, you'll be able to listen to us on there. You'll also be able to listen to our episodes on YouTube, our YouTube channel, Play on Nerds. Just search for Play on Nerds on YouTube. And we're also, this is big news. We're going to be having a Twitch channel soon, because Patrick's going to be our video game person. So he'll be kind of posting whenever he's playing a new game, and you can just kind of log in and watch him play, and he'll comment on it. And Steve and I might join him at random times just to kind of either play games with him. We're thinking, Steve, yeah, about playing old games like Age of Empires 2 or 3 and just casting it onto Twitch, which will be kind of fun. But yeah, so check out us on Twitch soon. We'll be posting about that, so keep an eye out for that. Patrick's being awesome with that, helping that go forward. But yeah, other than that, we'll probably see you in a couple of weeks, and hope you guys enjoy the show.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Have a good week or weeks, internet, and we'll catch you next time.
Stay nerdy, my friends.